Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Monday, October 28th. I'm Ray Graff. Support comes from CHP Berkshires, reminding listeners of the upcoming enrollment season. CHP's patient navigators are available to help customers update their plans, enroll in a new plan, or make a change. CHPBerkshires.org. Joining us for Medical Monday is Dr. Adriana Laser of Albany Med. She's here to discuss vascular surgery. If you have a question, call early. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. And you can email us as well, voxpop@wamc.org for your questions. voxpop@wamc.org or 800-348-2551. Vascular surgery, Dr. Adriana Laser, and your calls coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Here on this Medical Monday to discuss vascular surgery is Dr. Adriana Laser of Albany Med. Dr. Laser is fellowship trained and board certified in vascular surgery. She specializes in the operative and non-operative management of venous insufficiency, varicose veins, deep and superficial venous thrombosis, and lymphatic conditions. Other areas of specialized interest are taking care of peripheral arterial disease, carotid artery disease, wound care, and arteriovenous access for hemodialysis patients. To be part of our conversation today, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or feel free to email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Adriana Laser, welcome back to Vox Pop. How are you?
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you here. It's been a while.
Yes.
So before we get down to business, I understand that you have, for lack of a better term, new location now. So there's two different spots you can go for service, as it were.
Yes, yes. We have several offices, more than two, for just clinic visits,
right,
or office visits. But now we are doing our venous procedures in Niskayuna as well as Albany.
And most of these venous procedures, are they, they're all inpatient? I mean, outpatient,
yep,
I should say?
Outpatient, yes.
Wow, amazing. Yeah. And when did that, when did these, to me, deeply complicated surgical procedures become outpatient things? I mean, it seems like everything's outpatient.
It's been a little bit of a progress, but this, a lot of these have been outpatient for a while.
Yeah.
It kind of depends.
All right. Well, we thought we'd start the discussion today with a little chat about varicose veins and spider veins. What's the difference?
So spider veins are superficial. They're kind of in the skin, and you can usually see them based on their color. So they,
right,
can be red or purple or blue, typically. And they're very superficial, so they can either be treated with a laser or with injection called sclerotherapy.
And what does the injection actually do?
So basically it shuts down the vein. And
really?
Makes it so that you can't see it anymore.
So yeah. When it's shut down, does it just dissolve over time, or what happens?
Eventually your body will resorb it.
But, and varicose veins run deeper?
A little bit deeper, yeah. So they can be felt almost kind of like a worm, for lack of a better term,
yeah,
on the skin. You don't usually see the color of the blood through the skin, though, because they are a couple layers deeper. And they can actually be removed in,
oh,
a procedure called phlebectomy.
Interesting. So I always automatically associate these with old age. Is it just an old age thing that everybody has to deal with at times?
Definitely our risk increases just the longer we live, but many people actually get them quite a bit younger.
Really?
Even in their 20s. I have a lot of young patients, and venous disease, as compared to arterial disease, kind of the other half of vascular surgery, actually does present with younger patients.
Interesting. So what's actually going on in this venous disease?
Well, there's a couple risk factors. So part of it is just hereditary.
Right.
Part of it is lifestyle. So people who spend a lot of years and years on their feet. So teachers, nurses,
doctors,
cashiers, hairdressers, you know, those people are at more risk, higher risk. Also, women, after having been pregnant, are at increased risk.
Why?
Of developing these. Well, part for all of them, it's an increase, like basically gravity is at play. And some people have an internal problem called reflux or vein compression.
Interesting.
And then sometimes the only thing you can tell on the outside is these superficial problems. Then we do an ultrasound to check for those deeper problems.
Okay, so if you have varicose veins, then it could be indicative of something larger?
Could be a problem that's a little bit deeper, yeah.
Now, of course, my knowledge of anatomy is extremely limited, but arteries pump blood out and
Correct.
Venous brings blood back?
Correct, to the heart, yep.
Okay, and so when you have varicose veins, are they leaking? What's going on?
So varicose veins, it's interesting. They're superfluous. You know, they're extraneous. They're part of the circulation, of course, but they're not essential.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it is okay and doesn't affect your circulation overall negatively if they are destroyed or removed. And it's not necessarily leaking. They can bleed internally or externally, but typically they're just there, not leaking. A lot of times if some of the deeper veins are not returning the blood efficiently because their valves are not working properly,
right,
then we see the consequences of either sometimes just swelling or sometimes also and or varicose veins or spider veins.
We're joined today by Dr. Adriana Laser of Albany Med. When you do a laser procedure, do the patients say, well, that's kind of funny, laser doing a laser?
We say that joke a lot, yes.
Okay, and it's probably pretty tiring. All right, well, I'll just leave it there. 800-348-2551 is the number. I'll tell you, I apologize in advance if you're listening, and I give the fund drive number 17 times. We just got done with a two-week fund drive, and I'll try to give the Vox Pop number. It's 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. All right, you ready for an email?
Sure.
All right, here we go. This is from Ed in Wilbraham. Subject heading, hope I could say it correctly, carotid endarterectomy. Is that
perfect?
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What should be done when an echo indicates a 1 to 49% blockage of the carotid arteries? And when is a carotid endarterectomy appropriate?
That's an excellent question. So, yes, part of a screening process for carotid artery disease, which is, of course, the part we're talking about is in the neck. A typical screening test is an ultrasound, which they're referring to. And a 1 to 49% result is a very low amount of disease or atherosclerotic plaque burden.
Okay.
So basically, obviously, we're not giving individual medical advice over the radio.
Absolutely.
But
yes.
In general, a 1 to 49% is not going to be anything that's requiring any surgical intervention. And instead, discussion of lifestyle modifications and sometimes medical therapy would be the most appropriate.
Now, lifestyle modifications or medical treatment, that's not going to make it better, right?
It's not going to make the plaque go away, but it can help reduce worsening.
Okay. And so the carotid artery goes to your brain, basically?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I've heard of people who, I had 100% blockage. How do you survive if you have one of your carotid arteries completely jammed?
Yes, if it happens slowly, sometimes people can be completely asymptomatic. That's correct. We do have two, and we also have vertebral arteries posteriorly in the neck. And the way that most people's circulation in their brain is that there's a circle, and so there's connections. And so that's why the other parts of the circulation compensate, essentially.
Okay. Yeah. Dr. Adriana Laser joins us from Albany Med today. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number if you have a question. So,
did you want me to answer the second part of that question, too?
I forgot what it was, but feel free. Go ahead.
Well, I think he was asking when would it be appropriate.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And so if people have a greater than 50% stenosis, if they've had symptoms, that very well might make them a candidate for a surgical or stenting procedure.
Yeah. But, I mean, 1 to 49% is A-okay, and then at 51, it goes suddenly, we need to
well,
do
again,
something.
Well, again, this is why we have to take everyone individually.
Right.
And typically, there's more than one test done, so an ultrasound is a great screening tool, but it's not always as detailed as we might need. In that scenario, so if it does show greater than 50%, a lot of times, say, another test like a CT scan might be ordered.
Interesting. Now, if someone gets up there 80, 90%, you can still work on it? I was under the impression that once it's 100% blocked, there's nothing you can do.
You're correct. Once it's 100%, there's typically no surgical intervention that's going to help.
So what do you do in that 50 to 90% range?
So the carotid endarterectomy is an option.
That's, I mean, you're cutting it out? Anectomy means you're cutting it out?
You're removing the plaque from the artery.
How do you do it?
Sewing the artery back together. So you make an incision in the neck, and you dissect down to the carotid artery. You make a cut longitudinally in the artery, or transect or cut the internal carotid artery off of the common carotid artery,
yeah,
and literally remove the plaque. And then you have to reinstate that anatomy by sewing it back together.
This is interesting. So you can remove plaque,
correct,
from an artery. Now, I had been told by, maybe I got it wrong, which is entirely possible, that you really can't get rid of plaque in arteries.
It depends on what arteries we're talking about. So some arteries, it depends on the part of the body and how big they are and what studies have shown from previous. So what we do to an artery in the neck is not going to be the same treatment for an artery in the foot or leg or heart, per
okay.
se. Yeah.
Well, let's take a break here. I think I've asked enough penetrating questions for Dr. Adriana Laser. Now we'll get to you. Dr. Laser's with Albany Med. It's vascular surgery today. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's been a couple weeks. Zach, the engineer, fishing for the bumper music. Let me know when you have it, Daddy. Oh, there it is. Okay, we'll be back. Ich bin ein Chrome Dinette. There's a little Zappa tune by Ed Palermo. Sofa number one, I believe. It's Vox Pop, 800-323-9262. Dr. Adriana Laser of Albany Med is joining us today. And I fear we're all ready to run out of here screaming. But we only have 45 minutes to go. So you ready for some calls?
Yes.
Okay, we'll go to Broad Auburn first. Bob, you're on.
Thank you very much. The questions have been answered with respect to carotidectomy, although I have been told that people over 80, no matter the level, are not candidates for removal. I have a question with respect to the cost and the varied approaches to intervention in the leg where there is clotting or clogging of an artery. A surgical procedure to open up down through the length of the leg if there is closure along the length, and the intervention of wire into an artery, that method, and the resulting probability of occurrence of sepsis. I don't know whether there's a standard procedure to introduce antibiotic if there will be that kind of intervention, either surgical or using a wire into the artery. I wonder if you could respond to that.
Sure. So in terms of the first part, your carotid artery, a comment, it really is a case-by-case basis. And it, at least in our practice, sometimes people over 80 are candidates for carotid artery surgery or intervention. So it would be something you'd have to speak individually to your doctor about. But in terms of the leg procedure, so with someone with peripheral arterial occlusive disease or artery blockage disease commonly, or PAD, some people say PAD, lots of different ways to talk about it. But there are so many different options these days, and it really depends. I hate to say it again, but it really is case by case basis,
yeah,
because we need very detailed imaging for each person, and depending on how blocked it is and where the blockages are, you may or may not be a candidate for something, a procedure based on a wire, such as a stent or a balloon angioplasty or atherectomy. Or sometimes you're better managed with an open surgery, either a clean out artery procedure or a bypass.
Bob.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you. I'm tempted to ask you about the cost difference.
Different
methods.
Yeah, I think that Dr. Laser is not on the business end of it, but thank you for the call, Bob. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. It's vascular surgery with Dr. Adriana Laser of Albany Med. Let's go to Phoenicia, shall we? It's Robert. You're on.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I took my sister to a vascular person yesterday, and They did, at the end of the visit, they did an ABI, and the numbers were 0.34 and 0.19, and the 0.19 side of her body was badly damaged in a car accident long, long time ago. I was hoping that you could explain those numbers a little bit, and also he recommended doing a dye test for what he thought might be a small blockage in the bottom of her leg and what the risks of that might be. Thank you.
All right, Doc, before you start, just tell me what an ABI is.
So it's an ankle brachial index.
Okay.
It's one of many tools we can use to try to assess the artery blood flow or perfusion down someone's leg or arm. Unfortunately, just having the numbers, those numbers alone are not normal. They are abnormal. However, the part of the test that we find even more helpful is actually the waveforms. So the waveforms and the ABI can actually differ in the same exam, and we actually prefer and depend more on the waveforms. So if I were seeing your sister in office, I would be looking at those. And also paramount is the signs or symptoms of said artery disease, which is actually more important than the actual ABIs or just a number. If she does have symptoms of critical limb ischemia from her peripheral arterial occlusive disease, then I would agree with an angiogram, which I'm assuming is the dye test that you're referring to that was offered.
Yes.
Okay.
If I may say, the readings prior to the ABI that they did were fairly normal, as damaged as her left side is. I think it was 0.99 and 1.07 or 1.01 or something.
Mm-hmm.
And this is actually the third such study that she's had done in the last 2 years. And all three times, the upper part seemed to be okay. The vascular surgeon had told us it's normal. She has 100% circulation. And we have an appointment for the angiogram, but it wasn't until after I left the office that I read the literature and it indicated risks and complications for nerve damage. Is that rare?
So luckily, an angiogram is a minimally invasive procedure, but every procedure, including an angiogram, does have risks. Some of the risks that we quote are nephrotoxicity or damage to the kidneys from the dye. There's also risks of bleeding during the access point, removing and placing the needle. Issue with nerves would be, yes, quite unusual.
All right, Robert, thanks a lot for the call. Dr. Adriana Laser of Albany Med joins us today. You mentioned waveforms in that answer. Mm-hmm. What are you getting at?
So we get a readout of the waveforms that is actually more telling of how much perfusion is actually going down to each level of the leg when the test is done. The number can be falsely elevated, actually. So if you have abnormal waveforms indicating significant disease, you could actually have found a normal ABI. And so then you would say, what would we do in this scenario? And that's why I mentioned that the ABI can be falsely elevated. So.
Interesting. I mean, when I think of waveforms, I think of audio waveforms, sine waves. But what are you talking
like
about
EKG,
electronics or
like an EKG?
So what are you measuring, though?
So the amount of blood flow getting past blockages in the legs. So how much flow is getting to said area? So
I don't want to get too far in the
weeds.
Yeah,
it's a little.
But I'm curious.
Okay.
How do you measure electronically blood flow? How do you make that turn that into a wave?
Well, so the patient gets four blood pressure cuffs on each leg.
Oh.
And so it will measure the flow getting to the cuff.
I understand now. Okay, thank you for that. 800-348-2551. And now we'll go to our buddy Jim in Matamoros. Hello, Jim.
Can citric and acetic acid help remove plaque?
That using that is not something I'm familiar with.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Jim. 800-348-2551. Okay. Now, so far, no fund drive numbers. By the way, just for a second here, thank you if you are one of those people who put, you know, I don't know what the final tally was, but on the last day it was in the close to 9,000 individual pledges in this drive. And you guys were great, so thank you. Won't pester you again for a while, but just know that we're very grateful. All right, let's go to Steven in Gansevoort. Steven, you're on.
Hey, how are you two doing today?
Pretty good. Thanks. How are you?
I am well. Doctor, back in 2015, I had a bad viral infection, was coughing heavily, and collapsed in front of one of my patients in the office. Ended up having what is suspected to have been a dissection of the right internal carotid. CT angiography at the time showed no flow to the right hemisphere, and due to an aberration in the circle of Willis, I got my flow to the left frontal from the right side. Anyway, they shuttled me down by a rather expensive helicopter flight to Albany Med, and by the time I got down there, there were no neurologic abnormalities. Repeat scanning down there showed complete and normal flow everywhere, and there were no residual consequences. I haven't seen a lot of reports in what I reviewed as to the frequency of cough-induced carotid dissection. And I'm wondering as to your thoughts on that. I'm also wondering, and probably a better question for neurosurgeons, as to is there any reason for future concern going forward given that aberration and flow to the frontal lobes?
Yeah, I probably shouldn't answer about your second question because that's not my area of expertise. There definitely is trauma, you know, quote unquote trauma induced dissections for sure. You know, you hear about the chiropractor vertebral artery dissections, unusual, but it's still there. So it could have been that that's what happened to you. If your repeat scanning showed nothing, it could be that there was maybe. I'm just spitballing here because obviously I've not seen your scans, but, you know, there's always the possibility that an original call of a dissection or an abnormality in a flap was actually potentially an overcall. Or, you know, if this was a single episode for you and you've never had any other signs or you know, situations like this, I wouldn't walk around being overly worried that it's going to happen again.
All right.
I'm not, and I appreciate your feedback. Thank you.
Steven, thanks for the call. Dr. Adriana Laser joins us today from Albany Med. Getting back to the carotid artery and being clogged. First of all, how, in general, for an average human, how long is that artery?
Well, it actually goes all the way from the chest up through the entire neck, and then it splits about your mid-upper neck from the common carotid artery into the external and internal carotid arteries. The internal is the one that goes to the brain. So, of course, that's the one we care most about because that's where a piece of plaque, if it breaks free or embolizes, can cause a stroke or TIA. But the internal goes all the way into the skull.
So when you say it's 100, when doctors say it's 100% blocked or 60% or whatever, is that uniform across the entire artery or is it just in a spot?
That's a good question. Most of the studies are done based on the part where it bifurcates or splits.
Okay, so
called the carotid,
like a fork in a road?
Bulb. Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. So that's usually where people focus on for the surgeries that we were talking about earlier. However, more distal or further up into the brain, narrowings or atherosclerotic disease processes can be addressed by, say, a neurosurgeon or a neurointerventionalist.
Okay. All right, let's go back to our phone lines. Dr. Adriana Laser joins us from Albany Med, 800-348-2551. That's the number on this program. You can email voxpop@wamc.org. We go to Janice, who is, where are you calling from, Janice?
I'm calling from Red Hook.
Hello, you're on.
My question for the doctor is, how reliable is a calcium score test in determining how much plaque there is in the arteries.
So actually, I hope that you're seeing a cardiologist because the calcium score is used for the coronary arteries, which is actually part of the arteries that vascular surgeons don't deal with.
It's very fine-tuned. If you get to the brain, you don't touch it. If it gets to the heart, you don't touch it. Janice, while you're here, so the calcium is only a problem in the cardiac veins and arteries?
No.
Well, my understanding after talking to my doctor who had said that she might want to put me on statins was that the test determined how much calcium there was in other arteries as well, like the carotid artery and others. And that's not accurate?
No. It is. So atherosclerosis is a systemic disease process. But what your calcium score is for your coronary arteries doesn't give us an exact percentage or really any idea how much calcium or atherosclerotic disease process is going on in any of your other arteries. So if you were considered at risk for, say, lower extremity or carotid artery disease, you would have to have a different test.
I see. And so even with a score of zero, which is what I had, I shouldn't be overly confident that...
I think you should be pretty confident with that.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Okay, that's good.
Well, good.
Thank you very much.
Sounds like you'll live. Thank you, Janice. Appreciate the call. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Dr. Adriana Laser of Albany Med joins us. And if you have a vascular surgery question, feel free. You can also email voxpop@wamc.org. You mentioned imaging earlier. What's your go-to imaging?
Great question. So since I specialize in venous disease, our go-to is ultrasound.
Okay. Why?
So it is going to give us the most detailed and most sensitive imaging for checking for both blood clots in the veins, again, primarily in the legs, and that valvular function that we were talking about earlier when we have something called venous reflux.
Yeah.
That's the term we use when the valves in our lower extremity veins are not working efficiently to push the blood back up towards the heart. And the ultrasound, the ultrasonographers can actually tell us whether those valves, each one, whether they're working or not.
So MRI not indicated in this case?
So it's rare for venous disease to use an MRI in our situation, yes, especially in the lower extremities.
Now, the veins, as I understand it, are less muscular. They don't have as much energy as the arteries do, right? Is that why sometimes it just poops out and doesn't get all the way back?
Well, we have to remember it's also against gravity.
Yeah.
So the arteries have the benefit of going with gravity the most of the time. But when we're standing, especially, or our legs are hanging down while we're seated, it's much more difficult to go against gravity. I use an analogy of the Erie Canal, and when the boats need to go upstream, they go into the locks.
Yeah.
And it's almost kind of like, the door opens, and that's like the valves when we can actually use that analogy to get the blood to go upstream. And so if the valve is not working and it's kind of flopping in the breeze or stuck open or stuck closed, the blood just kind of sits there and kind of goes back and forth and is a lot slower and less efficient to drain up back towards the heart. And again, that's where we see these external consequences of either swelling and or spider veins and varicose veins, because the blood kind of goes out into the area of the path of least resistance.
Yeah.
So that's where we all have veins, superficial veins, veins in our skin, but we don't see them in all of us or in all the areas.
Yeah. So when you have a valve that is pooped out and it's not working properly, there's no way to fix that valve?
That's a good question. In the lower extremities, that was tried in the past. At this point, the large majority of patients are not going to benefit from that.
Yeah.
It's very unusually done that we do that kind of open surgery anymore for venous insufficiency. One reason is because it didn't work very well.
Oh, okay.
Because they are, like you said, that these valves are tissue paper thin.
Right.
And so it's really easy to just cause a situation where they're not fixed and you're inducing clot because you're damaging that area.
Can you use artificial work or, artificial tubes?
They've tried artificial valves. We actually did a trial about that recently.
Yeah.
I think the research will continue to try to find other ways to try to fix these valves, because we do have some good solutions, but we don't have great solutions for all the venous valve insufficiencies.
Yeah.
One thing that's helped for sure over the last decade and a half, is that we now have stenting that can be done in the large veins in the pelvis.
Yeah.
For iliac vein stenosis, or one term that sometimes people ask about is called May-Thurner syndrome.
Okay.
And so now that can be treated in a very minimally invasive way, which is excellent.
Stents are metal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's no state of the art that is beyond metal. In other words, there's no carbon fiber or anything that it would be better.
These are metal for now, anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. They're always coming out with new stents. But.
Let's take a break here. Dr. Adriana Laser of Albany Med joins us. 800-348-2551. It's the exciting world of vascular surgery, children. Feel free to give a call. McCoy Tyner and John Schofield together. Blues on the Corner here on Medical Monday. Ray Graff with you. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. Dr. Adriana Laser of Albany Med joins us today. And the email is voxpop@wamc.org. Here's one from Fran. Fran writes, veins are back again. That's the subject heading. I've always had lots of spider veins. Have had many years of treatments for them, lasers, injections. 2 years ago, I had actual surgery and removal of the great saphenous vein in my right leg, and a round blue bumpy vein behind my lower right calf was removed. New spider veins always came back, and I'm ever so dismayed that this round blue bump is also back and protrudes, even though I went through surgery because it was protruding. It was done in outpatient surgery with anesthesia, and I was in a full bandage from calf to upper thigh for a very uncomfortable amount of time. Now, a few years later, my right calf just aches terribly when I'm in bed at night. I'm wondering if this achy feeling has to do with the removal of my great saphenous vein. Frankly, I'm totally disappointed with all this vein stuff. By the way, I'm almost 77, having been battling them for many, many years, and have absolutely no health issues, nor do I take any meds. And that's from Fran.
Hi, Fran. Thanks for your email. It's great that you're in such good health. Actually, venous disease can strike anyone, not the patients with the same comorbidities or risk factors that we see in arterial disease patients or a lot of the things we were talking about earlier with atherosclerosis. Yes, I'm sorry that you've experienced something frustrating, like a recurrence, at least from what it sounds like. When a varicose vein is fully removed, it itself can come back, but other veins sometimes can take their place. We can't 100% predict that. If you were interested in being seen, we would probably start with an ultrasound to check if you had any other internal dysfunction in one of your other saphenous veins, or potentially even your deep vein system. Because again, there would be things we could potentially either do for you or at least talk about management to try to reduce worsening in the future.
We're joined today by Dr. Adriana Laser of Albany Med. Let's talk about risk factors for a minute. And by the way, if you have a question about vascular surgery, feel free, 800-348-2551 or email voxpop@wamc.org. Let's talk about risk factors for a little bit.
Yeah, so arterial disease is kind of the classic risk factors when you think about people who have heart attacks or strokes. It's, you know, atherosclerosis.
Yeah.
And there's diabetes and diet issues and a lack of physical exercise. Of course, there's a genetic component to that aspect of vascular disease, as well as for venous disease. Vein disease is a very different patient population, although a few unlucky folks can get both.
Okay.
But it's a very different set of risk factors. It's lifestyle, people who are on their feet all the time, people who are standing, especially if they're not wearing their compression socks. People can be at higher risk with becoming overweight, but that is really only one of the risk factors. We have plenty of people who are not overweight who do get vein issues.
Yeah.
There is also a genetic component. Some of it is hereditary.
Is there a specific gene?
Not known yet.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay. So you don't get the CRISPR out and take care of everything that way. What, in fact, and by the way, feel free to call 800-348-2551. What, in fact, do compression socks do? I've seen the ads. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they would help.
Yeah. So it kind of counteracts a little bit of the gravity problem and helps, so to speak, hold everything in. They should be graduated. And what that means is that the degree of compression is higher lower down on the foot and leg, and it gets a little bit less as it goes up. So if you see the advertisement say for 20 to 30 millimeters mercury, that's of course the degree of compression or amount of pressure pushing in a squeeze.
Yeah.
And because fluid will go to the area of least resistance, you want the fluid to be pushed up and out the leg.
Interesting. So, I mean, when you buy these things over the counter, and Lord knows I see the ads on TV for these things all the time, but those are not the same as ones that would be prescribed, right?
Actually, it's a good question. A lot of times people refer to compression versus, you know, medical grade compression.
Yeah.
You actually can buy the same medical grade that we would ask you to wear or to prescribe you to wear over the counter or, say, online.
Yeah.
At a big retailer.
Right.
But there are also much lower degrees that are not medical grade.
Right.
That are also sold. So
they just feel good.
Yeah. Most of them do make you feel better. But yeah, you don't actually need a prescription. You can buy the same kind that we would recommend. But if you're not sure, it's always good to ask first.
I mean, here's what scares me about the compression socks. If they're too tight, will my feet fall off?
So we get that question a lot.
Okay.
People feel like feels like a tourniquet or feels like it's, quote unquote, stopping their circulation.
Yeah.
Or cutting off their circulation. In that scenario, I remind people that their arterial blood pressure is, if it's normal, about 120 millimeters mercury, right? And these compression socks are 20 to 30. So you are not cutting off your circulation, luckily, and your foot will not fall off from wearing compression socks.
Yeah.
What it can do is, and this is another complaint I get a lot, if you wear the below-knee compression socks, then some people experience a lot of swelling in the knee or in the thigh.
Oh, interesting.
But I try to remind people that's just showing us that the socks are doing their job of keeping the fluid up and out of the area where you're wearing the sock.
Oh.
So unfortunately, you don't get a free pass from not having to wear the compression socks anymore. It should just be that those people might need a higher level.
Why don't you wear compression pants? Do they have those?
They have thigh high, and
really?
They do have waist high or
that's crazy
stockings. Yep.
And they work.
Yeah, but they're just harder to get on.
Now, you mentioned, you know, arterial blood pressure being much more than venous, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just confused how you know when too much is too much with this compression.
So you're basically not going to, in most people, most people who are wearing compression socks, again, all of this is individualized. And some people who do have arterial and venous disease might need to get a lower amount of compression sock or not wear compression. Again, that would be discussed individually. But the large majority of all comers talking about swelling and wearing compression socks, it is you are not going to be able to get on a pair that is going to provide too much compression because they become much more difficult to get on. 20 to 30 already takes usually a couple of minutes. If you're getting into, like, say, 30 to 40, you're going to be struggling.
Okay. Dr. Adriana Laser joins us from Albany Med today. Number is 800-348-2551. Vascular surgery on tap. Shara is in North Adams. Go ahead.
Hi. I am a daughter of a cardiologist, sister of a cardiologist, but I know this is different. And I am 41, almost 42, smoked for about close to 20 years, and I quit after my boyfriend at 41 had a heart attack. But when I had my daughter, I needed compression socks, and I do have varicose veins. So I was just wondering if there's anything I should be looking out for, to be concerned with.
Hi, that's a great question. Congratulations on your smoking cessation. And in terms of your varicose veins, if they're just there and you notice them and they're not causing you any kind of symptoms like pain, itching, burning, you're perfectly safe to just leave them as they are. They are not associated with poor outcomes like stroke, heart attack, or even deep vein thrombosis. I do get those questions a lot. If anything happens to the varicose veins and they're worse, such as a bleed or a clot in the varicose vein called phlebitis, you would notice it very significantly. Varicose veins is luckily not something that's going to get worse without you knowing. If something like that happens, then I would seek out consultation.
Sure.
Okay, I'm a teacher. I stand a lot, and so I didn't know if that was just something that would increase my risk too, or...
Yes, actually, teacher is one of those professions. I see a lot of patients with varicose veins. One thing you can do to try to prevent them or reduce the risk of them worsening is to wear those compression socks we were just talking about. But it's certainly nothing to worry about. But if you want to try to reduce your chances of it spreading or worsening, I would wear compression socks.
Okay, thanks for the call. Now, before I try this on my wife, it's probably better for me to have my feet up on the couch most of the time. Is that correct?
Elevation of the legs is helpful.
Would that be good? So what you're saying is I shouldn't be doing many chores. Is that correct?
Uh-oh. You're putting words in my mouth now.
Thank you, doctor. I'll take that as a yes. The number here is 800-348-2551, and the email is voxpop@wamc.org. Anne in Bonsville writes, I am a tall, thin female in my mid-50s. I have spider veins, terrible-looking mottling of color, and capillary pooling and dry skin in my lower legs, mainly from mid-shin down. I started getting sporadic foot cramps at night recently. I sometimes get swollen feet, but not often. Is this all normal for someone my age and build who is on her feet a lot? Should I be seeing a vascular specialist to get this assessed, or just start wearing compression socks, or both? That's from Anne in Bonsville.
Hi, great questions. Yeah, so again, without seeing you specifically, hard for me to say whether something is normal 100% or not. If you don't have any recent dramatic increase of swelling in one leg or the other, then I wouldn't worry about anything emergent from a vascular venous standpoint, like a blood clot. But if you've had these symptoms chronically on and off, the intermittent foot swelling and the spider veins, it really just depends on how much it's affecting you and your lifestyle and your ability to do the things you enjoy. If you want to see if it has a venous component, one way of starting out is you could try wearing compression socks. And that is usually the first thing we would tell you if you came in to see us anyways. So yeah, for a venous problem. So if you start that ahead of time, you're already one step ahead for when you see a vascular provider, if that's what you decide to do.
All right, we are joined today by Dr. Adriana Laser of Albany Med. We had that email earlier that was pretty extensive. The woman had surgery, and things kept coming back. If you are prone to either varicose veins or spider veins or whatever, and they're treated, mm-hmm, you're going to get them again?
Yeah, so it's a very good question. So varicose veins a lot of times do come back.
Yeah.
Hopefully we do a full assessment and we check for that reflux on the ultrasound for any kind of deeper problems and take care of that. Because if we don't look for it and take care of it, if it exists, then you are at even higher risk of developing recurrent varicose veins at a shorter interval.
Yeah.
But even if everything is done perfectly well by you and the doctor, you are still at risk of them coming back. Luckily, it's not like a cancer where we have to really worry. But we definitely have patients who come back, you know, every 4 to 5 years and need a touch up or need something else done.
And mostly that is for sort of not egotistical purposes, but it's for on the outside. It's superficial.
So are you referring to, is it cosmetic?
Yeah, that's the word.
So,
thank you. I'm a wordsmith. That's right. Cosmetic.
No, I think it's interesting. certainly some aspects of, especially spider veins, is the large majority of the time cosmetic.
Yeah.
Varicose veins really do cause a lot of symptoms in people.
Yeah.
That makes it not cosmetic if there's actual, you know, pain
yeah.
or itching or burning, but it is still luckily elective. So if I, you know, one of the first things I talk to people about when they come in, if they, even if they have symptoms, some people have been made to worry about the varicose veins, and sometimes my job is to reassure them that, listen, you tell me when you're ready, if you're ready, because this is not anything where a doctor should stand in front of you and make you worried and telling you you have to do something about this.
So you talk people off the ledge a lot.
Sometimes, yeah.
All right, Dr. Adrienne Lazer's here. Let's go back to the phones. We'll go to Plattsburgh. Carol, you're on.
Hi. I'm 66, and my family does have varicose veins. I did get it, unfortunately. I've had them for like 30, 40 years. I had an operation 2 years ago because I do see a local specialist. He did operate. He did alleviate. It got to the point I couldn't walk. I mean, I was crawling. That's how bad. My profession is I used to be a teacher, but I am on my feet a lot because I do my own property management. And I do wear, I'm wearing them again, you know, the ones that go all the way to the thigh. They're 20 to 30, whatever, MCGs, whatever it is. I'm going to be going back to them, probably going to be scheduled for surgery again. But I've been told that the compression socks don't prevent more veins, you know, from reoccurring. It just alleviates the pain. And I cannot, I have pain now, but without them on, I can't even walk. So my three questions are, one, is there any vitamin supplements that you can take that will help? I have Reynolds, too, so that probably doesn't help. But is there anything that you can take? I take multivitamins and all the supplements anyway. But is there anything that you can take that would help increase the blood flow? I go to acupuncture. I do have osteoporosis now, but I'm very active. I hike, I bike, I, you know, cross-country ski.
There are no known specific tested vitamins to really help reduce worsening of venous disease.
Yeah, and the swelling, like I don't consume salt because I do tend to swell just from consuming anything in salt. I don't eat any canned or processed foods, but there's no way to help with that other than what I do with that, correct?
Well, so that's a good question. Obviously, you're doing an excellent job with watching your diet and wearing the compression and staying active, elevating your legs when you can, of course. And
yeah.
There are other things, again, depending on what your ultrasound shows, it might be that there's an actual biologic reason why you keep getting the swelling. Both ultrasounds and sometimes even a venogram can be done to assess for different causes. And another thing.
Yeah, and that's what he does.
Yeah, and another thing that you can look into is there's actually a pneumatic compression pump that a lot of people with chronic swelling get real benefit from, something that you apply for every evening.
All right, Carol, thanks a lot. We'll quickly go over to Delmar. Only a couple of minutes left here. Eloise, you're on with Dr. Adrienne Lazer.
Quick question. Do you ever use embolization to take care of venous problems? And if you do, could you explain how that works?
So, yeah. So embolization at this point in time is typically reserved for a pelvic congestion syndrome, not so much superficial veins of the legs or vein compression syndrome. Is that sort of what you were referring to? Or
yes, yes, okay. Yeah.
All right. Thank you for your question.
All right. Thank you very much. All right. Only about 45 seconds here. I know it was very in-depth, this interview that I gave to you. Anything that I missed, a.k.a. everything? You have 45 seconds.
No, this was great. It's kind of full breath here. I think basically when it comes down to it, a lot of this is very individualized just for the listeners. And I think when in doubt, reach out. Don't panic, but reach out. And, you know, anything from swelling to veins to even the arterial disease, there's a lot of vascular surgeons in the region to help.
Is your job too compartmentalized? It's not a union thing, but there are, you know, you got to stay away from the heart. You got to stay away from the brain. Would you prefer just to have full reign?
No, I think the way that things work now is probably, unfortunately, necessary.
Okay. All right. Well, how do people find out about your services at Albany Med? I know you have a couple different locations, and then you have some other diagnostic places.
Yeah, so I guess if I could give the phone number.
You could.
Okay. 518-262-5640. That's our main number. And you just can ask for an appointment with me or anyone, any of my excellent partners, and we will help you.
Well, this was fun. I learned a lot. Thank you, Dr. Adriana Laser, for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Support comes from Dr. Jaan Shen, specializing in endoscopic spine surgery and disc regeneration, treating disc herniations, spinal stenosis, and myelopathy. envisionspinesurgery.com for details. Well, thanks for calling, everybody. Thanks for the great questions. Thanks for the emails. Thanks to Dr. Adriana Laser from Albany Med for being here. And, thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy, who did one heck of a job in the fun drive. And so did Dina Salzman, who screened the calls today. You know, once again, I want to thank all of you who have made pledges in the last couple of weeks. Spectacular. Again, we're not going to pester you too much for a while. Tomorrow, nice show ahead. We head outdoors in a metaphorical sense with the folks from the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. That'll be at 2 p.m. We'll see you for that. Stand by for something lovely.